Okay, we're in John chapter 7. We're going to look at a new aspect of the Jesus touch as we've been talking about in this study. We started out looking at some different encounters that people had with Jesus and looking at how Jesus dealt with those people in the situations and circumstances that they were in. His touch. How do we deal with people in all these different kinds of situations, circumstances, whether it's people that are searching for answers spiritually, whether it's people who are in need physically, whether it's people who are facing some kind of social dilemma that may cause tremendous embarrassment to them, as in the case of the first part that we studied, the wedding feast at Cana. We've been looking at how Jesus deals with all these different situations. The last part of our study, we were talking about Jesus dealing with the crowds of people, feeding 5,000 people, and we were looking at that from the perspective of, in a sense, a drama that's unfolding, and we were looking at different characters, so to speak, involved in that drama. And the main focus of that part of our study was on the different gifts that each one brought to that particular circumstance and situation. And then looking at the whole concept of the different gifts that all of us bring to the church, all the gifts that God gives to each individual person and what we bring to the table, so to speak, just like they did in that particular situation. Well, we take a little bit of a shift in this part of our study, and what we're going to be looking at is how did Jesus conduct himself in public. Okay, this particular part of our study really has to do with, in a sense, how Jesus carried himself. Okay, what was his approach with the crowds? All right, and part of this is also, what was the understanding that his brothers had of Jesus, who he was, and what their expectation of him was all about. So how did Jesus handle himself? And I think it will be helpful to us as we look at this to really kind of compare it in a sense or contrast it with the Jesus style. How does that contrast with the style of people today? Looking at the Jesus touch, and what can we learn from Jesus in his public life, kind of in general at this point in his ministry, that can help us in how we present ourselves to other folks. Let's talk about the brothers. John chapter 7, beginning in verse 2 here, Jesus has gone about in Galilee. He's staying away from Judea because of the Jews. They're wanting to take his life, verse 1 tells us. Okay, so we're entering into a period in Jesus' ministry that Merle Tinney refers to, and I've talked about him a couple of different times in his study on the Gospel of John, breaks it down into different periods and events and so forth. And he refers to the beginning of John chapter 7 all the way through chapter 11, verse 53. He refers to this as the period of conflict in the ministry of Jesus. What we're seeing here taking place is that up to this point, Jesus has been teaching, he's been performing miracles, he's been gathering large crowds of followers, people that are excited about him. There's this, in a sense, kind of this hint in the air of that, you know, maybe this is the one that we've been waiting for. There's rumors going all around. There's, you know, people are throwing that certainly out there, and you know, hey, this is the Messiah. They're looking at all the things that he's doing and saying, you know, nobody else can do this kind of stuff. If God weren't with him, does that sound familiar? Okay, Nicodemus, we talked about him earlier in our study, one of the members of the Sanhedrin. You know, they're recognizing something special about Jesus. But while all these things are going on, what's happening in a general sense is the common folks, Okay, the crowds, as the scriptures oftentimes describe them, the people in general are chasing after Jesus. Okay, they're following, they like what they're hearing, they like what they see, and so forth. But the religious leaders are more and more going against Jesus. They're not liking what they're seeing. Okay? Now, what's the difference between the two groups of people? Why is one so excited about Jesus and the other not? What's taking place here? Okay, power struggle on the part of, okay, the religious leaders, really. They're, you know, they don't like Jesus because he's coming in here and kind of, you know, tipping the apple cart, so to speak. He's shaking things up. You know, they got things going the way they like it. And here comes Jesus, and he's doing things and saying things that that kind of challenges them and goes against what they're trying to do and so forth. So, yeah, there's a big power struggle to the point where they've gotten to where they want to get rid of him. They're ready to find a way to kill him. Okay? Now, the people, again, they're excited about Jesus. Okay? There's large crowds of folks. We just got finished looking at in chapter 6 where, you know, there's this huge crowd of people. The men that were counted there were about 5,000, it said. So not counting women and children, we're looking at a crowd probably around 15 or more thousand people. Everywhere Jesus goes, the scriptures are describing that the crowds are chasing after him. He gets in a boat and he goes to the side of the lake. By the time he gets over there, there's crowds of people there. So there are times when Jesus, you know, he tries just to get away from the crowds. He goes up in the mountain to be by himself to pray, and he comes back down, and what does he find? There's the crowds. You see, the people like Jesus. They're after him. We saw the, as a result of the feeding of the 5,000, what was the main response of the people to what had just they had just experienced? What did they want to do? They wanted to make him king. And they were ready to do so, even if they had to do it by force. If they had to force him to be king, then they would do it. But he was that popular. Okay, they were ready to make him king. In chapter 7, beginning in verse 2, we find Jesus dealing with his brothers. Okay, now we're just going to take a minute to talk about this because there's no reason to really spend too much time on it at all. There's those who question, you know, the whole issue of whether or not Jesus actually had any physical brothers. The answer to that is yes. Okay, it says they were brothers. They were his brothers, okay? Half-brothers, okay? But they were his brothers. You know, there are those who will say, well, you know, they weren't really his brothers. They were his cousins, you know. Well, there's no justification for saying they were his cousins. The word in the Greek language is brothers, and it means brothers, okay? They were Mary's sons, okay? The reason that there's so much debate about that is because the whole idea of Mary having other children. He also, by the way, the scripture tells he had sisters also. But the reason that there are those who deny that is because it goes against their theology of, you know, Mary being a perpetual virgin, you know, and so forth. If we have to admit that he actually had siblings, that Mary had other children, then somehow that paints in their eyes the virgin birth of Jesus and so forth, which is really ridiculous. It says they were his brothers, and there are other places it talks about his brothers. They are his physical, biological brothers. They are the sons of Mary. Okay? So, here's the situation. Verse 2, when the Jewish Feast of Tabernacles was near, Jesus' brothers said to him, "You ought to leave here and go to Judea so that your disciples may see the miracles you do. No one who wants to become a public figure acts in secret. Since you are doing these things, show yourself to the world." And then verse 5, "For even his own brothers did not believe in him." Okay, let's take a look at this. Here's a big feast that's coming into Jerusalem, one of the three big feasts that the Jews celebrated, okay? The Feast of the Tabernacles. And so it is, in a sense, a big opportunity, and that's the way his brothers are presenting this to Jesus. Hey, there's going to be large crowds of people from all over the place that are coming, you know, for this feast and so forth. So here's your opportunity, okay? And what is the opportunity that they want him to take? Leave here and go to the feast so that your disciples can see the miracles that you do. Okay? They want Jesus to really, really go public with his ministry. All right? Now is the opportunity, with all these folks going to be gathering, for you to take this show on the road and go public and really gather a huge following for yourself. That's basically what they're saying. No one who wants to be a public figure acts in secret, they tell Jesus. Okay? Look. Oh, I think so. I think so. And then when you go down and you look at that verse 5, they didn't believe in him. And we're going to talk more about that in a few minutes. Yeah, I think there's some sarcasm in there. Okay? There's, you know, in a sense, it's kind of like, you know, what they're saying to him is, look, this is a great opportunity for a superstar to shine. Okay? You want to be a superstar. You want to gather all these people. Here's your opportunity. You know, go on out there and make it happen. If you want to be at the top, then here's your chance. Okay? If you want to win the world, you've got to dazzle the people with a show. That's really kind of the idea and the concept that they're presenting to him. Okay? Now, let me ask you this. Let's talk about this and get some ideas from you on this. Is that not how politicians and celebrities kind of do their thing today? Right? They have managers and handlers, okay, that show them how to win over the crowds of people, how to get votes, how to be more popular, how to sell more records or albums or whatever it is, CDs, I guess. I'm dating myself. You want to do that, then you got to have the right person that's there. It's really all about the public appearance and the show that you put on for folks. Ryan? Yeah, we're getting there. Yeah, absolutely. Here's a question for you, all right? If Jesus allowed his brothers to, quote-unquote, manage him, okay, how do you suppose that would go? Well, in other words, how do you think they would manage Jesus? What would they want to do with him? Make some money? Okay. Certainly a great opportunity for that, isn't it? Okay? Okay? But how would they go about doing that? What are some of the things that the managers, you think about it kind of like, what do managers of politicians and celebrities do today to really kind of boost their guy or their girl? If Jesus' brothers were doing that with him, what kind of things do you suppose they would do? Okay, all right, first of all, we're going to focus on the opportunities, right? Okay, what else? Okay, he's going to endorse some products. All right, Jesus, we've got this, the soap of Nazareth. It really cleans good. It gets all the fish smell off of you. And, you know, sure, okay, we'll put your picture everywhere. All right, what else would they do? Okay. Perhaps maybe it would be some things that would go along this line. That maybe they would say to him, first of all, we've got to get away from this town here. Nazareth has a bad reputation. Okay? So we got to get you out of Nazareth and get you to some, you know, Jerusalem is okay, but let me tell you, Rome is where stuff is happening. Okay? That's where everything is happening. We got to get you on the fast track to Rome, because you'll really be popular there. Okay? And perhaps maybe, you know, we need to get you some new clothes. You know, this wardrobe that you have is you know, let's get you something, a little, maybe some glitter on it, you know, some sparkles, and, you know, when the sun shines on you, Jesus, you know, when you're out there praying and all that kind of stuff, that, boy, that costume will just really light up and it'll draw a lot of attention to you. And so they're going to get him a new wardrobe. Perhaps they would also suggest, that they probably would, we've got to get you some new friends to hang around with. These guys that you're hanging around with are holding you back. I mean, come on, a couple of, you know, some fishermen, tax collector, a zealot, you know, they're rebels, they're problem people. We got to get you some new people to hang around with, because these guys are going to keep you from going to the top. Okay? And by the way, you know, whenever you're talking to people, let's kind of play down that born in a stable thing. You know, it's the other side of the tracks idea. You know, let's just kind of play that down, and let's not talk about that a whole lot. Okay? You know, just think about those kinds of that idea. Okay? Of trying to, in a sense, sell somebody. And isn't that really what his brothers were trying to do with him? You know, perhaps they really did, Peggy, look at this as an opportunity to make some money. Okay? And so, yeah, you know, let's get you, you know, all fixed up so that, you know, we can make some profit out of this thing. You know, Mom, she needs a new wash tub over here, you know, and we could at least maybe get enough money to buy her one of those. Okay? You know, they're looking at this whole thing from this idea of being popular and being on top. They wanted Jesus to operate basically from a position of strength. Okay? Again, go back to verse 5, and it says, his own brothers did not believe in him. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean when they say they didn't believe in him? Okay? I mean, they believe in God, okay? But they probably just at this point did not accept that Jesus was the Messiah. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. To them, most likely, Jesus is just their strange older brother. I mean, he says some weird stuff. He does some strange things. You know, but he's their older brother. Certainly not the Messiah. I mean, come on. Mom, could you tell us that story again about how Jesus was born? They didn't believe that. Okay. Is there something really, really special about him? Yeah, perhaps so. They understood there was something special, but not special enough to have him be the real Messiah, the one that they had been waiting for. Again, part of the problem is one that we've seen so many times with so many different circumstances and people, was their concept of who the Messiah was going to be. When you look at the brothers' response, and Jerry brought up earlier this idea that maybe there's a little bit of sarcasm in this. I think there's probably more than just a little bit. Okay, again, he's our older brother. We know who this guy is. You know, okay, sure, Jesus. Yeah, you're the Son of God, right? Well, you know, if so, then, you know, why not take this opportunity and let's make some things happen? Okay. So, yeah, there probably was a certain element of sarcasm on their part involved in this whole thing. Good? Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, they've seen some things that, you know, cause them to kind of, yeah, he's doing some things that are different, but is he really the Son of God? Well, they didn't believe so. Not yet. Not at this point. Okay. You know, this their approach to Jesus at this point is really a matter of where people are looking for praise. Think about it. Okay? Turn over to John chapter 5, verses 41 through 44. Let me get somebody to read those verses for us. John 5, 41 through 44. Got it. Okay, you know, here Jesus is kind of turning things around on his critics, isn't he? Okay, look, I'm not here looking for the praise of men. And isn't that really what his brothers are wanting him to go after? You see, go, you know, let's go where the crowds are so that you'll be popular and gain a bigger following, the praise of men. And Jesus, you know, in this situation, said, that's not what I'm about. That's not what I'm looking for. Okay? And he points out to them that their problem is what? What are they lacking? Well, he says, you don't have the love of God in your hearts. They, he... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, okay. And that's part of what he's pointing out here. What they're doing, they're doing it with a heart that doesn't love God. Okay? So that in itself is problematic, isn't it? You see, if your heart is not focused in the right place, then you're going to miss the point. Okay? And so, you know, he points out to them, you know, in those statements, look, I came in the name of my Father. I didn't come in my own name. I came in the name of the Father. And the result is, you don't accept me. But somebody else comes in his own name, you know, and what is that? You know, how do we look at that in modern day? Brian, you brought it up earlier. You know, and Ray, you're talking about, you know, there's a lot of these preachers today, you know, the mega churches, and, you know, they want to be popular. They want to have the big church and, you know, and all of the stuff that goes along with that. And they're getting a lot of praise for their name. Okay, Brian? Exactly. Yeah. We're coming there, okay? What is the problem that Jesus acknowledges here or tells them is standing in the way of their belief? What now? Yeah, it's not the love of God is there, but look at what he says here. How can you believe if you accept praise from one another? If your focus is on being praised and honored and glorified by each other, then how can you be focusing on praising God? You see? And what's the basic problem there? We've talked about this in our study, God's at war, you know. When you're doing that, what are you actually doing? What's really taking place here? You've taken God off the throne of your heart and you've put you, yourself, or someone else on the throne of your heart. You see? So how can you believe in God if what you're really doing is accepting praise from other people? You're putting yourself in the place of God. You see? He says, you make no effort to obtain praise from the only God. Well, that's an interesting statement, isn't it? You make no effort to obtain the praise of the only God. Okay? Okay. Right? What is he... Right? Okay. What does he mean about accepting praise from God? What kind of praise should we be accepting from God? Well done, my good and faithful servant. You see, what we have to make sure we don't misunderstand here is there's a contrast, isn't there, between the accolades and the praise of men that are going, wow, you're the best, you're the greatest, and we put you up, and honor you and all this kind of stuff. There's nothing wrong with people giving each other a pat on the back and saying, yeah, you really did a good job with that. And, so that's not what he's talking about here. Again, the context of this whole story is popularity and being up on the top, right? You see, you need to go where the crowds are so that you can really make a name for yourself. The focus is all about me. When the focus is on God and us living as His children, okay, think about it in terms of the praise that you give to your children as their parent, as their father or their mother. Okay? That you're proud of them as your child. Okay? And you encourage them and you say, yeah, you did good. Okay? Why do I have pictures of my grandchildren on my door? Because I'm proud of them. Why? Because they're my grandchildren. You see? And I love them. And so I want to encourage them as they're growing and so forth. You see? And that's what parents do. So when I'm with my grandchildren, I tell them how sweet they are and I hug them and all those kind of things, which is, in a sense, a form of praise, is it not? It's acknowledgement of how important they are to me. And that's what we should be seeking from God. I think that's part of what Jesus is referring to, is that whole idea of receiving God's praise, you see, in that kind of a form. His expressions of His love and approval of us as His children. And Jesus is pointing out to him, they're looking after the praise of one another and they're accepting the praise of people rather than going after the praise of God. You see, the problem is that when we look for the praise from men, and Jesus is pointing this out, when we're looking for praise from people, then that's going to stand in the way of our belief in God. Okay? How can we say, in other words, that we believe in God when the approval of man is more important to us than God's approval? See, that's a big part of the issue. And that's what stands in the way so often. We're chasing after the approval of people, and we will compromise on things that we know we should do or shouldn't do that are displeasing to God, and will not give us God's approval. We'd rather have people's approval. And when that's going on in our lives, there's a blockage there in terms of our believing in Him. And when we're talking about believing, it's not just simply, as we've talked about so many times, intellectual acknowledgement of God. It's talking about us living a faithful life with Him. When we're focused on approval of people, then our life is not going to be one that is chasing after God. Right? Because people become more important to us. Now, as Jesus interacts with people, okay, His whole approach and His response to what's going on with His brothers and their perspective, their thinking, okay, you need to go where the people are and let's make you as popular as we possibly can. You want to be on top, this is what you've got to do and so forth. Their thinking contained a really, really basic fundamental flaw in it. Okay? What was it that they stated to Jesus to begin with? Okay? If you want to become a public figure, okay, that's where the real flaw is. Jesus did not want to become a public figure. That was not His goal. See? That was not what it was about for Him. Their concept, Brian, of the earthly Messiah was not in line with Jesus' mission. See? And that's where their thinking was flawed. They had this, as we've talked about many times before, like so many of the Jews, they had this physical, earthly kingdom concept of the Messiah. Okay? And certainly, if that's your thinking, if that's your vision, that the Messiah is going to be an earthly king who's going to come here, He's going to set up His kingdom, He's going to rid this land of the Romans, and we're going to be free to live happy as how we want to under our own people and our own king and all of those things that go with an earthly kingdom, if that's your concept of the Messiah, it's real easy, isn't it, to see why they would be going, look, Jesus, we got to go to the big cities here. We got to get your picture up on the billboards. We got to make you popular, even more popular than you are. If you want to be king and you want to take a look, the people are ready to make you king. Let's capitalize on that. Because their understanding was not in line with His mission. Their thinking of fame and clout, visibility, popularity, all of those kinds of things equal what? Strength. They all equal strength. Okay? You want to be a strong leader of the people. You want to be king. You want to run things. You want to get things done. Here's what you got to do. You got to be popular. You got to have some clout. You got to know the right people. You got to be visible. All of those kinds of things. So you need to rule from a position of strength. Again, we've mentioned earlier, doesn't that sound a whole lot like, especially our politicians today? Okay. The problem with that is that Jesus operated from a position of vulnerability. Think about that. Jesus operated from a position of vulnerability. Think about some of the concepts that we have today, especially for men. Okay? what are some of the things that men don't do if they want to be shown to be strong? Don't show emotion. They certainly don't cry. Right? Pardon me, what's the shortest verse in the Bible? You know, some would say, well, he blew it right there. You know? But isn't that really what it's all about? When you're operating from a position of vulnerability, you see Jesus there at the tomb of Lazarus with his sisters there. And what happened? Cry. Right? Real men don't cry. Okay, so he's got a strike against him, doesn't he? You know, how do you think it went? You know, again, we're looking at the Jesus touch. And do you think Jesus ever wiped a tear away from his cheek as he touched the leper? Look at some of those circumstances and situations, and you know, we talked about the woman at the well, that woman who, you know, was an outcast, as we talked about, and so forth. And what was on his heart as he, as we talked about, made that bridge from where she was to where he was, and the compassion that he displayed with her that was most likely so different from the way that most men treated her. Position of vulnerability rather than a position of perceived strength or worldly strength. Jesus operated from a position of weakness, not a position of strength in terms of how the world sees it. But in actuality, he operated from a position of where the real strength is, didn't he? But that's not how the world sees it. His brothers wanted him to operate from that position of strength because they saw the possibility of him being one who was going to solve all of their problems, whether they were personal, economical, or whether they were national in terms of being the king who was going to save them from the Romans. In order to do that, you've got to be a strong leader. In order to be a strong leader, you've got to be popular, you've got to be out there with the people, you've got to know people, and all of those kind of things. And Jesus is going, "Not who I am. Can you imagine what was going on as Jesus took off his outer garment, took a bowl of water, a bowl and a pitcher of water, and went around to each of his disciples and washed their feet? He came to Judas Iscariot, knowing what Jesus was about to do. And then he came to Simon Peter and said, "You're not going to wash my feet." What a contrast. Why didn't Peter want him to wash his feet? He was taking the form of a servant, and that's not what leaders do. "You're not going to wash my feet." In fact, I think, you know, really the whole thing is probably more along the line of that Peter's going, "It's not a position of strength. you're going to be the Messiah, you don't get on your knees and want to do the truth. But yet that's what Jesus did. And so Jesus operated from this position of weakness, not a position of worldly strength. And today, what does Jesus call upon you and I to do? Calls upon us to deny ourselves. Not to seek fame and fortune and popularity and all of those things in the world, but to deny ourselves and to take up a cross. And what are crosses for? Not just to suffer, to die on. Crosses were made for death. Jesus calls upon us not only to deny ourselves, but to take up our cross, to be willing to die and to follow Him. Okay? And the only way we can truly follow Him is to follow Him from that same position of weakness and vulnerability. We've got to be willing to be vulnerable. That's the Jesus thing. Ryan? All going to be gone. Yeah. Okay. I want to encourage you to keep reading in this story here a little bit. We're going to pick up here next week and talk a little bit more about as Jesus is dealing with this situation with his brothers, and how does Jesus really make himself vulnerable and serve in this vulnerable position? All right? Thank y'all very much.